Tonight's talk is reviewing your practice. This is a tradition in Buddhism since Buddha, where one's practice gets thought about, and where we look to see where the difficulties are and what might need a little change up. Very often in the time of the Buddha, a bhikkhu would go and ask him a question, something that was on that monk's mind about how he was doing things or his understanding of the Dharma as it related to what he was doing. And there's no particular way to do this. I'll probably make that statement several times in the next 20 or so minutes. But there are different ways to approach it. You can do it by yourself, or you can do it with a teacher. That's usually called an interview, and it's done at retreats. At longer retreats, you'll be assigned a teacher and 2 interviews a week. Or at day-longs, usually here, we will put out a list for interviews. And I go down to Insight Meditation Center and lead half-days and usually give 4 to 6 interviews during that time. Or it can be done by appointment. And you can do a practice review with a Dharma buddy. Now, I was being a little facetious when I wrote my draft notes, and I said, or a taxi driver. I would recommend that you pick a taxi driver who knows the Dharma and whose practice is, you know, kind of like a tennis partner. It's at the same level or better than your practice. Here's what I do for my practice reviews. I do the self-reviews a lot, at least once a week. It's not like every Sunday, every Tuesday I do it, but that's how often I am aware that I'm not completely satisfied with the way my practice is going, or I have a question about it. And so I'll identify what the issue is and what I know of the Dharma. And if I can't solve that myself, then I have a couple of go-to people. First one probably is my Dharma buddy, but I'll start talking about Gil, who is my mentor. And I see him every few months, either on retreats or when I drive down to attend that half-day retreat. And then I'll sign up for one of the interviews that he's giving. I'll do that when I'm unsure. My self-reviews haven't really found a comfortable way forward, or I just feel out of touch with him. And in fact, the last time I was down there, he said, well, you know, when you're not here, I forget you. And then he doesn't give me any half days to teach, and I like to teach, so I try to stay in touch. And then I will do a practice review with Deb Kerr whenever we have the time for it. Sometimes I call those practice reviews dim sum, because we'd love to go for dim sum together. And about halfway through the little treats, one of us will say, so how's your practice? And we'll get down to it. So here is how it goes. When I do a self-review, I'll focus on whatever it is that I'm uneasy about. And usually I do that by tuning into that uneasy feeling and seeing if the cause of it will kind of perk up to the surface. frequently what it is that I feel I'm not meditating enough. I'm just not giving myself enough time and space. Or I'm not handling the hindrances very well. And the big one for me is aversion. The hindrances, by the way, there are five of them. There's desire. And I'm not a desire-driven person, but a lot of people are. I am driven by aversion. It's just my type. Sometimes I'm driven by delusion. But, you know, those are the three main causes of suffering. But as hindrances, it's either desire or aversion. And then there's restlessness, or the opposite, which is sloth and torpor. Instead of being antsy, you just kind of drift off. And then the fifth one is really powerful and sneaky, and that's doubt. So my aversion usually takes the form of fear. Sometimes anger, but a lot of it is just preferences. I like that. I don't like that. I don't want that to happen. Thank you very much, but I'll pass. So however I do it, whatever the subject matter is, it's just a tune-up. And it definitely includes my daily life practice. So all of these things that I mentioned, the doubt, the frequency of meditating, whatever, these things can percolate up to the surface either in my meditation or in my daily life. With Gil, I mentioned that, you know, sometimes I just go talk to him in order to stay in touch. And those times I'll start out with something like, oh, I'm fine, thanks. But then we'll chat and it will become obvious that that's not entirely true. That there may be some things that I haven't really become aware of until I'm face to face with my teacher. Some of the things that I talk about with Gil, because he is my teaching mentor, are the issues that come up with my teaching. For example, I can't teach the aggregates. I've tried. I've tried several times. Y'all fall asleep. The aggregates are, well, he says he doesn't even try to teach them. And he knows the Dharma backwards and forwards. It doesn't really suit our cultural frame of mind. So he gave me some examples of other ways to do it. So I have been stealthily teaching you the aggregates without you realizing it. And it doesn't seem to have done you any harm. Thank you, Gil. And when I go to talk to Gil, I always practice dana. It's my opportunity to cultivate generosity and express my gratitude for all the help he's given me over the years. In my interviews with students, which is not just the day-longs that I've mentioned, but also the annual online course, Intro to Meditation, that's 10 half-hour sessions a week with that many students for 5 weeks, used to be six. And I really get a refresher course in the problems that we have with meditation. It's amazing the variety of ways in which the human mind can work. I think it reflects the range of personalities and perhaps even the brain, that we just don't register things in the same way. So these practice reviews can't possibly be one size fits all. It has to be geared to the individual. Or the individual will express what they are dealing with, and it will come out uniquely for each person. Sometimes when people come into the interview room and sit down and they look at me like I'm supposed to do something, I just ask, well, what's up with you? Or what are you working with in your practice? Where's its edge? There are some issues that come up very frequently, and I'm going to go over them here because I'm going to invite you in 15 minutes or so, maybe less, to practice a practice review. And maybe as I go down this list, it will bring up something that you want to talk about. A big one is what teachers call efforting. It's a verb, and it means trying a lot or too little. There's a balance. I am an advocate of understanding the wise effort that's in the Eightfold Path differently than how much effort we put into our meditation. Some people are different. Some people conflate the two, but there's no doubt about it. How much effort you give your practice is important. And among those who err, most err by efforting too much. I recently reviewed a Dharma talk by Gill in which he says that, you know, a lot of what meditation is about is letting go of stuff, not doing stuff. It's about not doing, not thinking, not scratching, not daydreaming, just being there. So when we start trying to do stuff, we're kind of working contrary to the purpose of sitting there. It took me about 5 years to find my comfort zone for mindfulness practice. So generally, less is more. If there's a tension in either the mind or the body, the chances are pretty good you're trying too much, or something is distressing you. And then there's a really strong possibility that the reason you're trying too much is you're trying to drown out what's distressing you. And again, the purpose of sitting there is to watch your mind. Let that kind of stuff arise and be processed. And I don't mean doing a whole daydream thing around it, but letting yourself feel it. You'll know what it's about. You don't need to think about it. So if you're going through stuff, have the tissues handy. Now, one of the visits fairly early on that I had with Gil, I said, all right, I've been doing mindfulness practice for many years now, and I'd like to explore concentration practice. And I found this balance of how much effort is right, but I'm just not getting any traction with concentration. And he said, well, good for you for finding the balance of effort, but if you want to do concentration, try harder. So remember, most of what we're doing is mindfulness practice, not concentration. Concentration is an element of mindfulness, but concentration practice is different, and it has limited specific things that are good, but it's not what you're probably doing in your regular daily or whatever meditation. If you're not doing it day after day after day for like a week or more, then you're probably not doing concentration practice. Concentration practice takes concentration and a lot of it. Another issue that comes up a lot is the body. And specifically, being aware of the body's experience. A lot of mindfulness practice is about being in the body, being embodied awareness. And this is very hard for a lot of people. So if you're sitting there right now and you're thinking, what is she talking about? You have a lot of company. That being said, it's definitely worth trying. And breathing is a great way to open the door to awareness of the body. A lot of times when we're watching our breathing, we're knowing that we're breathing in and breathing out. And in fact, that's what the suttas say. That's what the sutta about breath awareness and the sutta about the four foundations of mindfulness say. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. But if you feel it rather than know it, then you will have more concentration in your mindfulness practice, and you'll be better at being present in the moment. The more awareness you have in the body, the more grounded you are in what's going on right here and right now. Because the body is right here and right now. Where else would it be? So if you're inside the body, the chances are you're here. You're not in some fantasy world. And we spend a lot of time in the fantasy world. In daily life, it is invaluable to have quick access to awareness of breathing. I was talking to a relative today, and she has two toddlers. She's working on a master's degree. She's just moved. Her husband was just attacked, sent to the hospital, and she doesn't quite understand why she's so highly stressed. But she kind of freaked out when one of the kids did something that she really needed to intervene on and was having a lot of trouble getting back to the conversation. So I said, well, take a deep breath and try to breathe in with your belly. And if you can do that, I have learned, you will tone up your vagus nerve. The ancient advice of take a deep breath, breathe 3 or 10 times before acting out, that's why. So being able to come back to awareness of the breathing is really helpful. Not only does it calm us down, but it returns us to mindfulness. Now, I promised that I would come back to doubt, the ninja of the hindrances. It is really hard to spot because it comes at us wearing a cloak of truth. We need to identify it as doubt in order to overcome it. We need to recognize that it's not true, that it's just doubt. So you see, the moment we spot it, and know that that's what it is, we're halfway done. It is not true. So what am I talking about? Well, many people just doubt their practice. They wonder, am I doing this right? They figure, well, I can't do this because, well, usually the problem is their idea of what this is. They have some notion that there's a particular way to meditate, or that, well, whatever it is, they're not doing it. Or they're just not getting whatever goals met that they had set for themselves when they took up this practice. A lot of people go into doubt, especially beginners, because when they first begin to see the mind, to see into the mind and what it does, they're freaked out. They had no idea it was so chaotic. It keeps coming up and keeping them from watching their breath, because, again, they think that's what they're supposed to be doing. They think that the purpose of meditation is to stay with the breath. But again, that's concentration practice. It's to be expected with mindfulness practice that the mind is going to stray, because it has stuff on its mind. And that's going to come up. So when we're trying to watch the breath, then we see what's going on in the mind. It sneaks in and catches our attention. So what do? We go to the body. We see how that thought has affected us. We go to the suffering, which is the body's experience. The natural tendency is to try to fix it, to solve the problem with thinking. But what mindfulness does is to just let it be. Just be a loving observer as that feeling passes through our awareness. We don't need the story for that. We can drop it and just focus on the feeling. And when the feeling isn't taking up our attention, then we go back to paying attention to the breath.
Can I ask a question about the body?
Yes, please.
So when you're talking about contemplation of the body, are you talking about like the clenched stomach or the shortness of breath or the emotional effect on the body? Or are you talking about contemplating hair, teeth, skin, nails, the physical components of the body so we're not so connected with
That's a very good question, Amy. In the sutta about the four foundations of mindfulness, that practice is part of it. What I'm talking about now is the actual sensory experience of the body. And the way I learned it was that in one of my interviews with Jack Kornfield, he asked me a series of questions like, what does it feel like? Are you feeling pressure, heat or cold? A tingling, some tension. So just as Amy outlined, those are actual feelings, sensations, as opposed to a list of, oh yeah, the body has hair and teeth and fluid and connective tissue and that sort of stuff. So I'm talking about the actual experience, the physical sensations. The people who have doubt because they're freaked out when they look into the mind by how chaotic it is. And also, I think it's freaky to see how unkind our minds can be. That drove me crazy for years and years, until I finally just recognized my mind can be an ordinary little cuss. And that's all there is to it. And I don't have to go with that. It just comes up and I can let it pass away. The people who are freaked out by it just need reassurance that to see the mind at all is a really big step forward. Because given the total number of human beings that have ever lived, very few have ever seen the mind. Very few have turned the attention inward enough to be freaked out by it. I just want to cover actually meditating. And I did briefly about how often. Daily is prescribed. Most people have trouble. Long-term teachers have trouble. Pema Chodron once admitted on TV that she did. I have trouble, for what that's worth. For me, it's the momentum of a lifestyle in a culture that values getting things done. It's a big deal in our culture. We're productive. Aversion. We are often averse to what we see going on in the mind. And so we don't want to do it again. Or we don't like the feeling of stress that comes up because, unbeknownst to ourselves, we're trying too hard. And it's a new habit for a lot of people to do some meditation every day. And it takes skill and determination to change habits. It just does. I've mentioned daily life practice. That is the big thing that comes up in practice reviews. The skills that we have acquired in meditation help us deal with daily life. The more mindfulness we bring to daily life, the more we will be able to apply those skills to living well. And so practice reviews can connect these dots. And that's when it's really helpful to have a Dharma buddy who's at least as good as we are, or a teacher who's better. For a few years, a while ago, Alameda Sangha teachers would start the discussion period asking for questions about practice. And that's kind of petered out because there wasn't much response. Every now and then, there'd be one or two questions, but very often nothing. And I got to thinking that maybe it was that people weren't quite sure what kind of questions to ask. And now I hope you see that there is a very wide range that's perfectly appropriate and lots of other things that would work very well that I just don't have time to list. So let's practice reviews. Thank you.